argument on a motion that the appellant has made to dismiss the certificate of appeal. So we'll hear from the appellant first.
Good morning, Chief Judge Urban, Senior Judge Cox, honorable members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Major Jeff Davis, and along with Mr. Brian Miser, we represent the appellee, Senior Airman Wilson, in this case. The Judge Advocate General failed.
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor.
Pull that microphone a little closer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The Judge Advocate General failed to timely file a certification for this court, and the case should be dismissed. This case can be decided on the simple procedural facts that occurred below. 19 June of 2015, the Air Force Court issues a decision. Exactly 30 days later, on 20 July of 2015, the government files a motion for reconsideration. 5 days later, on 24 July, that motion is denied by the Air Force Court. Now, appellee takes no issue with that filing of that motion for reconsideration. Appellee takes no issue that the filing of that and the denial was what would have triggered or told the 60-day clock for the Judge Advocate General at this court. So there were no issues up to that point. Now, then, on 3 August of 2015, this is 45 days now from the original decision, the government files a second motion. And I want to pause now and talk a little bit more about that motion that maybe wasn't as fleshed out in the briefs as it should be. The Air Force Court has a rule that states all motions for reconsideration must be filed within 30 days of the decision. Now, as I said, the first motion that the government filed for reconsideration was filed within 30 days. So no issues there. This second motion is one of two things. It's either an untimely motion to reconsider because it was not filed within 30 days of the decision, or it's a motion to reconsider the denial of the motion. And if you, I realize the court didn't grant on any of the certified issues, but there is a joint appendix with this court. All the pleadings are in that joint appendix. In the government's pleading that they filed, that second motion that was filed on 3 August, they essentially concede that it is not a motion to reconsider the decision. And obviously it's not because it's not timely filed. They only had 30 days from the decision. So that second motion is simply a motion to reconsider the denial of the first motion, not a motion to reconsider. So on those grounds, this court really doesn't even have to get to Sparks, because technically I would argue, and I don't think it's a matter of semantics, the second motion is not a successive motion to reconsider the decision. It's an entirely different motion, and had no effect whatsoever on the tolling of any time period at this court, because this court's rules state that the only thing that affects a tolling is a motion to reconsider the decision, not some other motion to reconsider some other issue. So after that, on 10 August, now 52 days removed from the decision, the Air Force Court denies that second motion, which again is not a motion to reconsider the decision, but a motion to reconsider the motion to reconsider. And then at this point, and here's really the takeaway point, even when the Air Force Court denies this second motion on 10 August, the Judge Advocate General still had until 22 September to meet the 60-day deadline. So there was plenty of time. The government could have done all these things that they did down at the Air Force Court, and they still had time to certify this case without a problem. They just chose not to.
I'm okay.
Ooh.
What happened? Our boat came. I'm okay.
Please continue.
And I've recently lost weight, Chief Judge.
And so the point being that appellee is conceding that the 60-day clock for the Judge Advocate General would have started to tick when the Air Force Court stamp denied on the motion to reconsider. So that 60-day deadline was 22 September. Well, the Air Force Court denied the second motion on 10 August. So the Judge Advocate General could have easily done it. They just chose not to. And the certification wasn't filed until 7 October. That 7 October puts you at 110 days from the first decision. It puts you at 75 days from the first denial, so 15 days past the 60-day deadline. And it, I would concede, and appellee concedes, it puts them at 58 days after the denial of the second motion, which again was the motion to reconsider. So it simply just wasn't timely filed. not even getting to Sparks, just looking at the plain rules of this court and the Air Force Court. It wasn't timely filed. And then, obviously, once you round that corner, you bump into Sparks and over 60 years of precedent that has gone without notice for 60 years. And there's no reason for this court to do anything sua sponte to change those rules or to change that case law.
Was the second filing, is it your contention the second filing was dilatory?
Meaning
it was filed to chew up time. I mean, admittedly, they also tried to get in this affidavit, which did not accompany the first filing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
I don't think they were doing it to chew up time. I think you're asking me to speculate, Your Honor.
Yeah.
If you want me to speculate, I guess I will, but you're asking me to speculate. I don't know. You know, the government's here, and they can say why they did it.
I'll ask the government.
And so I'd prefer not to speculate
okay.
if I don't have
fair it. Enough.
Now, counsel, we've never ruled on this issue before.
That appears to be correct, Your Honor.
So would it be arbitrary and unreasonable for us to impose this new rule in this case as compared to exercising our authority to waive the rules here and entertain this case in this instance and say going forward, we will not permit this to happen?
The answer is no. If I could address the second part of that first. I don't think it would be appropriate for this court at this stage in the proceedings to sua sponte do anything favorable for the government. If the government wants to come back after a negative ruling and file some kind of out-of-time motion to request good cause to suspend the rules, they can do so. And the Judge Advocate General can do so. For this court to do that, not knowing or understanding what the good cause is, seems to very much impinge upon the rule of law. And so the court should rule in accordance with this court's rules and with accordance with precedent and let the Judge Advocate General and the government, if they want, file some kind of out-of-time motion for good cause to extend. And then to answer...
Has this happened before? I mean, has the government done this before?
To the best of my knowledge, in all the cases, certainly by the Air Force Judge Advocate General, they've been filed within 58 to 60 days before this court. In the last...
So it's not like we've been letting them do it and letting them do that and suddenly no.
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, no. To answer...
You're obviously conceding then that this is not a jurisdictional issue. If you say they can ask for permission to file late, then...
I think that's a very fair question, Your Honor. What I take jurisdictional to mean when you ask that is sort of statutorily or somehow structurally barred as the 60-day deadline for appellants. I can see that there is no statutory deadline built into the TJAC certification in the statute. So from that perspective, I suppose you would say it's non-jurisdictional. But you do have Sparks, which is 60 years of court precedent. So, you know, it's certainly jurisdictional with respect to precedent, but not jurisdictional with respect to statute. That certainly seems to be the case. To what extent that distinction, I guess, matters. You know, I think the court either has to overrule Sparks or the court has to suspend its rules and say they don't apply to the government.
But you contend that the key date then is the denial of the motion for reconsideration.
It's yes,
not
Your
the,
Honor.
It's not the date of the original decision.
Yes, I concede that 24 July 2015 is when the 60-day clock would have been told. That would have brought the Judge Advocate General up to 22 September 15 to certify the case to this court. I would concede all of that. I believe the case law supports that position.
Counsel, you said you wanted to address a point I had made.
Yes, sir. It was kind of the first part of your question, Your Honor. And it addressed this sort of, is this a unprecedented issue or whatever? And, I mean, I don't think that's entirely fair. Any fair reading of this court's rules and the case law would say that the Judge Advocate General at least ought to be erring on the side of caution before this court and not just saying, well, since they never said anything explicitly, I can't do this, I'm going to go ahead and do it, even though precedent, if I look at it fairly, would seem to suggest I need to do it on time. At a minimum, one would think the Judge Advocate General would have simply filed it with this court and then could have filed a petition to ask the court to dismiss it without prejudice so he could further advance the matter at the Air Force Court. Procedurally, that would have been the more appropriate avenue to go so that the Judge Advocate General was being conservative to ensure that he could use his certification powers and not end up tolling, missing a deadline. So that's to address both of the parts of that. Barring any further questions from the court, if I may, Chief Judge, I'll just reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay. No other questions? We'll now hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Roger Bruce. Major Payne and I have the privilege of representing the United States before this court today. The United States respectfully asserts...
Would you also speak up, please?
Sorry, Your Honor. I will. Thank you. The United States respectfully asserts that this court has a statutory obligation to review this certificate for review under Article 67A2. This court has jurisdiction, and no statute, rule, or case defeats that jurisdiction. And apparently now the appellant has conceded that this court has jurisdiction as well. First, Your Honors, I'd like to point out that there's nothing in the law that prohibits the government or an appellant from filing two timely motions for reconsideration. We should start with a review of the statutes at play here. Unlike a petition for review under Article 67B or a government appeal under Article 62, there is no statutory deadline in Article 67A2 for a certificate for review. The statute quite plainly states, this court shall review the record in all cases reviewed by a court of criminal appeals, which the Judge Advocate General orders sent to this court. It is our position that the jurisdiction question starts and ends with Article 67A2. I would also note that Article 71, under Article 71, direct appellate review was not complete because the judgment in this case was not final, because the review was not completed by the CCA until they denied the second motion for reconsideration. I would next turn to the CCA
rules. Where in the CCA rules do they recognize such an animal?
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly where I would like to go next.
And how do you respond to the appellant's contention that it isn't a second motion for reconsideration, but rather, and as it appears, is a motion to reconsider their denial of their motion for a reconsideration?
Yes, Your Honor. I understand.
However you say it.
Yes, Your Honor. I would point to Rule 19B, which is applicable to all CCAs, and it plainly states that as long as a petition for review or certificate for review has not been filed at this court, a CCA may consider its decision or order in any case upon motion from either defense or government filed within 30 days. A decision or order may be reconsidered. There's nothing in 19B that prohibits timely and successive motions for reconsideration. In fact, we argue that 19B on its face permitted it. The Air Force Court's specific Rule 19.2 provides the same. Quote, the court may reconsider a decision or order terminating the case previously rendered by it, provided that jurisdiction of the case has not been obtained by CAF. Jurisdiction vests with CAF when a petition or certificate has been filed with that, quote, court, end quote. In 19.2, nothing in that rule prohibits timely and successive motions for reconsideration.
Well, do I understand you to say that you're agreeing with them that that's the substance of what the government did, but what you're saying is the rule permits it?
It absolutely permits it.
Right. And a decision or order includes a decision or order denying reconsideration.
On its face, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's the government's position.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
There is a little wrinkle to that in that in the second motion, the government did, in fact, offer a motion to submit the declaration in support of that second motion. So I haven't quite wrapped my head around that, to be honest, but it is different than the first one entirely, and I would bring that to the court's attention.
Yeah, but reconsideration had already been denied. So
yes, Your Honor.
So in that sense, regardless of what the government was trying to slip in, it seems to be on its face a petition for reconsideration of a denial of reconsideration.
I can't disagree with that,
okay.
Your Honor. Next, this court's rules governing certificates for review permit and certainly do not prohibit the certificate that was filed in this case. First, as noted in this court's order, Rule 19B3 states that a certificate for review shall be filed no later than 60 days after the date of the decision of the CCA. And then the rule directs us to Rules 22 and 34 to determine the date of the decision of the CCA. Rule 22B3 again provides A certificate for review shall be filed no later than 60 days after the date of the CCA decision, and then specifically directs us to Rule 34A to determine the date of the CCA decision. Rule 34A provides that the date of the CCA decision is the date of the decision and is applicable in this case, quote, unless a petition for reconsideration is timely filed, in which event the period of time to be computed from the date of the final action on the petition for reconsideration. And that's what we have here.
But you want the final date of the final action on the petition for reconsideration to basically be whenever you get done filing things, however many you might file, and they keep on denying them, as opposed to their final action on your motion for reconsideration, your initial motion for reconsideration.
Well, Your Honor, I think it would be on the final, it's our position, it would have to be on the final action taken by the CCA.
But then that leaves the time period solely within your control. I mean, you could file 15 motions, you could file 15, you know, requests that they continue to look at your motion for reconsideration. And under your view, then, we have to take your certified issue.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with that because there are limitations to motions for reconsideration. They can't be filed endlessly, and we're not here to suggest that they can. The limitations I would point this court to are several. First, all attorneys, whether for the government or defense, have professional responsibility obligations applicable to them. They cannot file frivolous pleadings. And a motion for reconsideration followed by the same motion for reconsideration followed again and again would, in fact, implicate professional responsibility.
Well, isn't that what we've got? Slipping the affidavit in. Isn't that what we've got here?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that.
Please reconsider this. No.
Yes, Your Honor.
Please reconsider this that you just denied. No. Oh, and by the way, take this affidavit.
Yes,
leave the affidavit out of it. Isn't that exactly what was done here?
I would disagree with that. And Judge Ryan, I'll get back to your question in a moment, if I may, so that I can answer Judge Stuckey's question. I think you really have to take a hard look at what happened in this case.
But look at the language between the two motions. I mean, they're almost identical.
They're not identical in that, and I think you have to go back to trial to really appreciate the posture of what happened here. At trial, the defense never objected to the victim's pregnancy or miscarriage testimony. Chief Judge Allred from the CCA's dissent was absolutely correct in this regard. The defense never challenged her pregnancy and miscarriage testimony at the CCA in their brief. In fact, it was the CCA.
Pardon? Tell me what's different. Don't argue the merits of your case. Tell me what language is different.
Well, the difference is the declaration of the expert witness.
But what's different about the motion?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The language and the motions, they're the same. I
mean, no, Your Honor, there is
word for word.
There is discussion about the declaration provided by the expert witness, Your Honor. I'll find that for you.
Well, if this was so important to the government, why didn't they include it with the initial motion?
Well, Your Honor, I'll finish that point. It wasn't brought up at trial. In fact, this was all part and parcel of both the defense and the trial counsel's case. They both wanted this information into evidence, which is why the military judge never abused her discretion in permitting that.
Okay, I'm not like Judge Ryan. I'm not interested in the merits. We're not here for that.
But to get to the question as to
why didn't they do it the first time?
That's exactly what I'm trying to answer here.
Okay,
Ryan.
Tell me.
It didn't come up at trial. It didn't come up in the defense brief. The CCA specified the issue, but never gave any indication that they had concerns about the pregnancy or the miscarriage of the victim. The first time the government learned that the court had any concern about her pregnancy and miscarriage was in that decision itself. And we learned from that opinion that they formed medical conclusions based on medical records in an appellate exhibit that was never admitted.
The decision that you were asking them to reconsider
exactly.
The first time around.
Exactly.
So what's the difference?
Well, the first step the government took was it filed a 21-page pleading challenging the CCA's erroneous medical conclusions. We argued the same records that the CCA relied upon to reach that erroneous conclusion. The government thought that was going to be enough, especially when armed with a thoughtful dissenting opinion from the chief judge that motion was going to be sufficient.
Okay, the government thought it was going to be enough. It wasn't.
It wasn't. So what
okay.
did we do? So 10 days later.
That's Your Honor, why you want to slip this other thing in,
Your Honor,
and that's the only difference between A and B.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. We didn't slip anything in. Once it became apparent that they were going to stand by their erroneous medical conclusions on evidence that was never admitted into the record, we then, just 10 days later, there was no delay here, just 10 days later, obtained the expert testimony from the doctor who absolutely refuted their decision. And it shows beyond any debate that their decision was clearly erroneous and had to be further appealed. That's why it wasn't included. We thought that the 21-page first motion debating the same records that they relied upon.
Well, obviously they didn't agree with you.
I agree, Your Honor.
Ms. Bruce, could you circle back to Judge Ryan's question about what would prevent the government from filing successive?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you for that opportunity. First, our first point is the PR, the professional responsibility obligations on all attorneys. Second, as this court noted in United States versus Roach at 66 MJ 410, the CCA can issue orders and enforce rules and deadlines. CCAs do it all the time. This court and the CCAs routinely issue orders, for example, on motions for enlargement where they will say no further enlargement will be permitted. If a party submits successive motions for reconsideration that are simply repackaging the exact same thing over and over again, it is our position that a CCA could issue an order not accepting any further motion for reconsideration of that, which would then bring final
decision. But until basically you're warned, you get to do it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Well, until basically they say no more, until the government is warned, you get to do it? You get to file dilatory motions?
It's our position we were not dilatory in this case, Your Honor. It's our position that the second motion was, in fact, very substantively different because it proves conclusively that the CCA's decision was clearly erroneous. Their factual conclusions.
Nothing proves conclusively anything. That's not before us. Keep yourself to the substance of the question, please.
I am attempting to do that, Your Honor.
What do you do about the language in Sparks, which says that a second motion for reconsideration by a board will have no effect in expanding the period within which an accused may petition the court? Right? I mean, that's really old precedent. Why, given that precedent,
well,
right, given that precedent,
yes, Your Honor. Sparks.
Why would you possibly think that you didn't need to file a certificate here within 30 days of the denial of your petition for reconsideration?
Yes, Your Honor. First, I would distinguish Sparks in that it was concerning an appellant's petition for review that was required to be filed statutorily within 30 days. We don't have that here. But we think
you're still talking about the effect of a filing of a request that the petition for reconsideration be reconsidered.
It does, Your Honor, but we think Sparks is even more instructive because it cites to another early 1950s case, United States versus Sell. And that's at, in the opinion of Sparks itself, 3 CMA 202. And in that case, this court noted in Sell, there a certificate filed by the Judge Advocate General more than 30 days after the original decision of a Board of Review, but within 30 days from the time the Board had denied the motion for reconsideration. We held that the filing of the motion delayed inception of the 30-day period for certification. Now, that doesn't answer the question about a second motion.
We agree with that, and I mean, and even the appellant agrees that the 30 days starts not when the decision was issued, but when they denied the motion for reconsideration.
Agreed,
That's
Your
a
Honor.
A totally different question than whether filing a second motion that on its face appears to mimic the first motion gives you even more time. I mean, that's the question. That's the only time we're talking about.
I agree. There is no specific case anywhere to be found that addresses the two motions that
well,
we
no,
have.
Sparks does. It says that you don't get to extend the time but by that, filing it unless it gets granted.
But that was in an appellant's petition for review.
Why would you already get, right, a benefit that the appellant doesn't have? You, the government, get to certify whatever issues you want to, and you routinely do so when you're not happy with the result. And that's fine. The statute permits that. But if the statute doesn't say that you're not bound by the time rules.
No, the statute doesn't include any time rules whatsoever. It simply says that this court shall review a certificate for review sent by the Judge Advocate General.
Doesn't that prove too much? Aren't you then saying that we shouldn't obey the own rules that
apply? No, I'm not, Your Honor. Our position is that the rules were followed in this case, and we think there's further support to be drawn from this court's decision in Smith. Now, I acknowledge Smith didn't have two motions for reconsideration, but Smith makes it very plain that there is no decision until the reconsideration process is complete. It's our position that the reconsideration process is not complete in this case until that second motion, with its different, very different affidavit that accompanied it, was resolved by the CCA. That's what triggered the 60-day clock, and that's why when the government filed 58 days later, the statute and the rules were all complied with in this case. We're not seeking to avoid the rules. We believe the rules were, in fact, complied with here.
What's your reaction to defense's point that the door wasn't closed to the government? You could have filed after the first motion for reconsideration. You could have then filed a certificate for review here and then filed again at the CCA. So it's not a situation where the door was closed in any way to the government. You could have taken affirmative steps.
The predicate of his position, was it that we would file a certificate for here and file a recon at the CCA?
The second time around, you would not have been precluded from doing so at the second time of the CCA.
Perhaps I misunderstand his point, but if it's that we can litigate before both courts at the same time, I would respectfully disagree with that.
I thought his point was that even after your second motion was denied on August 10th, you still had until the 22nd of September to file with us, and you would have been timed.
Right, and you piddled around and didn't file until later.
Well, I don't disagree with him that we could have filed earlier. Our position is, though, under the statute and the rules of the CCA in this court, there wasn't a legal requirement, and therefore jurisdiction, in fact, exists in this case.
Argument is almost that under the statute and the rules, you're not required to file within any particular time.
No, Your Honor, that's not our position. Our position is that we did, in fact, comply with all rules, all case law precedent, and the statute itself.
The best way you have to distinguish Sparks is that there it was involving a petition for reconsideration by a petitioner.
Well, another interesting thing about Sparks.
I'm just asking you, is that how you distinguish it? Is it involved the petitioner's successive motion for reconsideration, not the government's?
And
that they have a 30-day time period and you have no time period in the statute?
No, Your Honor. Another distinguishing fact in Sparks was this court's point that it made. Then it was a board of review. There was no rule, no provision for reconsideration like we have today in the Board of Review. That's stated right in Sparks itself. Your predecessor said that it was just an inherent authority to file a reconsideration. But in fact, there were no rules applicable to reconsiderations at the time of Sparks. Unlike now, we do have rules, and it is our position that those rules were in fact complied with. So I would distinguish Sparks in that regard as well. To finish that point about there are limitations, first, I said the professional responsibility. Second, the court can issue orders. Third, if the government filed successive and identical motions for reconsideration for the purpose of delay, and that's not what happened here, but if we did, we would be risking a Moreno or Tardif violation against ourselves. We'd be shooting ourselves in the foot, and that serves as a further prudential limitation. And I would like to also quote Sells one more time, which is quoted in Sparks, where this court said in Sell, a motion for reconsideration not made in good faith or made solely for the purpose of delaying final disposition of a case might well be subject to a motion to strike and treatment as a nullity. There are prudential limitations if a party abuses the reconsideration process, but it is our position that simply did not happen here. That parade of horribles is held in check by these prudential concerns. Our position, though, is there's no need or authority to draw the line on what happened in this case. They were timely, they were appropriate, and there's no law that contradicts that position. If there are no further questions, may I very briefly conclude, Your Honor?
Please do.
Appellant's motion to dismiss the certificate for review should be denied because the government filed timely motions for reconsideration, and Congress has declared that this court shall review the certificate. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The matter is now submitted. This court will be... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Good point.
Counsel, before... Counsel,
that was
before
a
you...
subtle hint, counsel. Yeah.
Counsel, before you begin your rebuttal, if I change the facts just a little bit.
Yes, Your Honor.
They filed a motion for reconsideration. It's denied. And that's the date that you say is the key date, 25 July, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What if instead of filing a successive motion for reconsideration, in light of the Chief Judge's dissent, the government had now moved for consideration en banc by the court? And the court sat on that motion till the 30 days or 60 days expired and then denied that motion. What would have been the, what's the effect of that motion? In other words, where is jurisdiction while that motion is pending?
Now, are you suggesting, Your Honor, and I apologize just to clarify, that the lower court sits on the motion long enough that it might hold the...
Exactly. If they had sat on this second motion until it went...
I guess I think there's two options. One is, tough luck government, you made your choice, you got to live with it. The government gets to decide whether they want to appeal to this court, or in this case, the Judge Advocate General.
But you agree they can't do both, can they?
No. They got to make a choice. And that's the choice they made. There's no reason for this court not to say you got to live with it.
Well, what if you had made a motion for reconsideration and it slid by the 60 days? Doesn't Sparks say that's...
Same rule. You got to live with it. Attorneys and clients have to make strategic decisions before the Air Force Court and this court. The rules are plain on their face. You got to play by the rules. If you want to take your chances and bust your metric here at this court, then you do so. But you do so at your peril. There's no reason for this court to help out either an appellant or an appellee, or the Judge Advocate General or the
government. It seems like, and I haven't researched this, okay, but it seems like what we're dealing with is a question of when is finality under Article 67.
I think that answer is easy. It's 60 days after denial of a motion to reconsider. And if there's no motion to reconsider, it's 60 days after decision. That I don't mean to be flippant or simple about it, but that's the answer.
Well, you just got through saying to make strategic choices.
Yeah. You know what the rules are. So if you want to...
What rule says you can't make a successive motion for...
No. You could do whatever you want. It just doesn't have any effect on this court's rule.
But how does that put you in greater peril than if you wait? You make a motion for reconsideration. 61 days goes by, they deny.
Yep.
You didn't make a strategic choice. There's no final decision yet.
Well, no, it's the second motion is what I thought you were asking. If it's the first motion to reconsider, the Air Force Court can sit on it for 90 days if they want. Because not until they hit
And that's
denial.
What I don't understand the difference.
Okay. That's just the court rules, and that's just what Sparks says. Sparks says that you get the tolling of the time period after the denial of the first motion to reconsider, and that's what Rule 34 for this court says.
Okay.
So if it's motion to reconsider number one before the Air Force Court or any CCA, the CCA could sit on it for 90 days, and it would have no effect on jurisdiction at this court because that's what Rule 34 says. Now, the question becomes, once they stamp denial on the first motion to reconsideration, this court's rules in Sparks say you don't get any more time.
Well, what about the motion for en banc? Would that total it?
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
And again, the central issue is we can live in one of two universes. This court can live in one of two universes. A universe in which everyone below, the parties in the CCA, get to control this court's jurisdiction with the filing of motions and orders and decisions, or this court can make rules that it holds all the parties bound to. And you get to make your decisions based on what those rules say. Those are the only two universes you can live in. And for the past 65 years or so, since Sparks and probably before then, we've lived in a universe where this court has rules and this court has precedent and the parties below have to abide by it. And if they don't, that's fine. They just don't get to come here and complain about it. They make a strategic decision about what they want to do. Now, another option, which I think addresses your concern a little bit and comes back to Judge Olson, because I think I was making both arguments with Judge Olson and Judge Ryan, Rule 19G of this court's rules, I think, addresses this to some extent. And it says, if an appeal is filed in this court before the expiration of a time to file a motion for reconsideration to CCA, a party can file a motion asking to dismiss without prejudice at this court. So I think to some extent that is an option, that is an out for appellants and the Judge Advocate General to say, hey, we have some other avenues we would like to proceed at the CCA, but we're running up against our clock. Let us file this petition with this court, and then we will file a motion to ask to dismiss without prejudice so we can try to proceed at the CCA. And this court can deny it or grant it based on whether there's good cause or not good cause.
Was the second motion that was filed by the Air Force government timely filed in your view under Air Force Rule 19?
No, ma'am, it was not. But that depends how you look at it. If you look at it as a motion to reconsider the decision of the Air Force Court, no, it was not. It was filed 45 days after the date of the decision. Air Force Court's rules for motion for reconsideration state that all motions for reconsideration are due within 30 days of the decision. It was not filed within 30 days of the decision. That's why it's not a motion to reconsider the decision. That's why that motion had no impact whatsoever on the triggering of any deadlines with this court, because this court's rules only discuss a motion to reconsider the decision, not a motion to reconsider the denial of a motion to reconsider. It was a moot filing for the purposes of this court. This court really needs to get no further than that to decide this case. That filing was moot on this court's rules and this court's precedent. I see I've run out of time, barring any further questions.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. And again, I'll thank counsel for both parties. And now the matter is submitted, and the court will stand in adjournment until further order of the court.